Welcome back, guys. DGS on Camo X 205. You can listen to us at 1120. You can listen to us at 98.7 FM. You can listen to us on the Odyssey app. You can also download our podcast, which Andrew, who's my podcast guy, just did the numbers, and they're crazy. They're just insane. Literally millions and millions of podcast downloads. I just gave the guys the numbers. We have 400,000 this year out of Denver alone.
Denver?
Whoa. Yeah.
Look at you rocking Denver.
What's up, Denver?
Yeah. Right.
Thanks
yeah.
for listening.
A lot of people in Canada.
Coming your way.
You're big in Canada.
Yeah, we just crapped on them, too.
Oh, no.
I know.
Podcast the first hour.
Listen, yeah. Dave, they get it.
You're right.
I'll put a little tag
they
on
know.
The...
They know.
They get it.
They get it.
Canadians, stay out.
So,
no, thank you.
So, legitimately, thank you. That's really pretty amazing. It's fantastic that you guys go out of your way to listen to the show in a way that's convenient for you. So, and they can do that anywhere, right? Odyssey app,
yeah.
iTunes.
Yep.
Odyssey app. Apple Podcasts is the most popular. I can see that too. That's the most popular way that people get it from. But we're on every podcast app. So if you have Podbean, yeah. Podbay, any of that stuff, find us on there.
Appreciate it. Tell your friends about it. Stairway to Kevin?
Sure. Let's start with, you know what? I decided I want to do some audio with this. I think we have it. It's not too long, but it's a little bit long. But obviously, I'm very involved and have been for a very long time in youth sports. Specifically baseball, but I mean, I grew up in youth sports as a kid. I mean, and it was a different world then than it is now. It's far more organized. There are a lot more options now. There are a lot more ways that you can spend money to get private lessons in anything. I'm in baseball, but this is true for football, basketball, gymnastics. I mean, you name it, it's true. But this is a mom, and this is a really common theme that I see quite a bit. I get a lot of these on TikTok probably because I watch them, but it's a common theme about the general complaints that, quote, youth sports are out of control. So I want to play what this mom had to say and then follow up on a couple things.
I think kids' sports are ruining families, marriages, and kids themselves. Calm down. I can already feel the heat coming through the phone. You don't like that. I get it. My son was in two sports in the spring, and we had something every single night of the week in terms of a practice. And then we had a practice or a game, and then we had games on the weekends as well. And we were exhausted. Everybody was exhausted. I never saw my husband. We never had actual time to connect. We never had any good, intimate, connected family time. Everybody was tired. We were at each other's throats. We were just going and going and going and going, and I won't do it. I won't do it. I know that kids' sports, recreational sports, team sports are very important. I know there's a lot of lessons that come out of that. I played sports when I was a kid. But this has gotten insane. My kids are 6 and 9. And at this level of competition, of expectation that we have of kids at this age, I think it's detrimental. I think it's harming more than it's helping. And I sure as don't think it's helping marriages, which are already struggling. Marriages aren't like on the up and up. I don't know if you know this, but like half of them end in divorce. And I don't think burning yourselves to the ground, running kids around every single night and every single weekend is the answer.
All right. So a couple things. I'm not going to get too deep into that last part. I would seriously doubt that this is causing divorces. It may be opening up rifts that already exist and making things worse, which sure, you know, that's a bad thing in and of itself. But I don't want to talk about that so much as I want to talk about parents ceding control of their kids' lives and acting like it's not their choice. You signed your child up for two sports in the same season, and you're blaming youth sports going crazy for all of your family troubles and for the, it's you. You're the one doing that. This is what drives me nuts. People will blame, baseball, they blame travel ball. In basketball, they blame AAU basketball. They always want to blame some kind of thing or, you know, people, it's just about money or whatever. Well, you don't have to do any of it. This is the point. All of it is voluntary. All of it is a choice. Don't sign your 9-year-old son up for two sports in the same season. I played a sport every season. I played basketball. I ran cross country. I played baseball. I never played two at once. And most kids don't play two serious ones at once. you do have some crossover, right? Like, so I'm coaching summer ball for guys that just finished eighth grade that are going into high school. And they will have some high school basketball camps in baseball season. They will have some football stuff in baseball season. There's some bleed over. But if you're signing up for two specific sports in the same season, that's your fault.
Also, to play devil's advocate, I can hear the mom saying, I'm not blaming the sport. I'm blaming the pressure to be in the sports.
It's only pressure if you allow it to be. That's it. If it's not for your family, then it's not for your family. You are the parents. In my family, my wife and I made the decision. To quote George W. Bush, we were the deciders. If it was too much, then we said it's too much. You're allowed to tell your kids something is too much. No, Jimmy, we can't do both at the same time. That's crazy. Or, hey, listen, we will do everything we can, but we have limits. Like, that's what I don't understand is this kind of push back against what they view as a system forcing them to behave a certain way, but nobody's forcing you to do anything. You completely control what you decide for your children. And if you're the one that thinks, well, they're never going to play this college sport if they don't do this, it's still on you because that's not necessarily right. There are multiple paths to pursuing sports. And by the way, at 6 and 9, you shouldn't even be thinking about college sports. You should be thinking about them having fun and learning. And then later on, if they're good at it and they like it, you can have that further conversation, right? At 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is not the time to be going, we got to get them ready to go to college. You don't do that in school. You're not saying, well, we got to get his transcripts ready to go to Harvard. No, I mean, you're going to push in the classroom. You're going to hire tutors if you need help. And then this is the other thing that kind of ties into this is I don't get why so much. Maybe it's just me, though, being a sports guy, you know, so I see it, hear it more. But it's always a pushback against sports and not other intramural activities, right? I mean, does it not cost you money to send your kid to get music lessons? Does it not cost you money if your kid's a dancer? My sister was a dancer, a very competitive dancer, and ended up dancing for Central Michigan in college. Like, very competitive dancer. My parents spent more than $10,000 a year on dance for my sister when she's in junior high and high school, on costumes and competitions and travel and all that. But I don't hear the same criticisms for these other things. Is it wrong if parents are spending extra for their kids to get more work in school, to have tutors on the side or to learn things beyond what their age level? And why is it only sports that we get upset about this? Or am I wrong about that?
I would imagine that there are similar moms and dads out there who would say the same things about dance.
Okay.
Nick, my son, who will be 30 on his next birthday, can get a little salty with me sometimes because I was the opposite. Because I was pushed so much in athletics, I decided I wasn't going to do that. So we gave him the opportunities, played soccer, played baseball, didn't fall in love with it, didn't make him do it. Now he's a little bit like, I wish you would have made me do it.
No, Dave, you were right.
But I'm just saying, like, yeah, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
But the point is, he didn't come out of that this amazing athlete because he just got to be a kid, but he got to be a kid. We didn't run around like chickens with our heads cut off, going from one wrestling meet to another. So we lived a life, we lived a non-kid sports life, which was pretty sweet.
But if you gave me the choice when I was 12, I would have chosen what I'm doing. I would have chosen what I see now. If as a 12-year-old kid, you said, Kevin, you can put in all of this time and all of this effort and go through these things, I'd be like, sign me up and give me more. I would have taken every bit of it. And again, there are a couple of things that I always offer as a guideline because I know that I'm in it and I understand that my position is in some way influenced by being in it. But there are two things that are true that do not waver regardless of whether I'm in it or not. One is the parents are always in control of the decisions regarding their kids. And if you're putting that responsibility off on other people because of pressure, it's still your fault. It is still on you to do what's best for your kid, not on me.
And your marriage.
Right, and for your marriage and for your family. And the other part is you have to know your kid. You have to know your kid. You have to understand their personality and ask them, what do you want? Because I can also tell you, I've seen a million times over 20 years, kids that really don't want all the extra, but their parents make them do it, or they think their parents want them to do it, so they're doing something to please their parents. You need to know your child. But especially at these younger ages, I mean, I see this all the time. I see these dads and moms, and they're like, my son's in 9U, and the expectation, then you're on the wrong team. You can change that. You can, like, if you think it's too much, there are rec leagues out there that will be a lot less of a commitment. In fact, if you really want to take a smart route when you're young, and if you don't want the travel, the money, and all that, you can play recreational ball and then get private instruction on the side and get better and do all those things without spending all the time if that's what you don't want. If it's what you want and if your kid wants it, well, then pursue it.
We talk about this all the time, but it is truly sociologically, if I were a scholar, if I were a sociologist and I didn't even have kids and I studied the phenomenon, I would be utterly amazed publishing my peer-reviewed paper that we've gone from Jack and Francis Glover, who are nice people, but didn't seem to care a whole lot about what I was doing or where I was or who I was. They didn't care for me. They didn't nurture me. They provided for me. And that was the standard, to be fair. When people came home from World War II, they weren't there to nurture. They were there to provide. And in one generation, from Jack and Francis to Nick and Phoebe, it's become all about the kids. Mm-hmm. And I've always said this. I've been very consistent. I think if you want to build a great parent, average out my parents with me. That's a good parent.
Yeah. And I guess the bigger point in all of this, too, is there is nothing that equals absolute success or absolute failure in this process. If your kid wants to make it a certain level and they don't, it's not a failure. Because the good part, the lessons are learned in the trying.
Right.
The lessons are learned in the efforts trying to put something together. And then you realize, wow, that was really hard and it didn't work. I'm going to find another thing. And unfortunately, we all the tendency right now when it comes to, and I've seen the horror stories that people talk about. I understand the negatives. Every single part of raising a kid can have a downside, right? Having a cell phone can have a plus and a minus, right? Plus is they're safe. They always have a way to contact you. Minus is they got access to a whole lot of things you might not want them to have access to, right? There are a lot of things that have the plus and the minus. And youth sports, dance, music, none of those things are exempt. Everything has good and bad. But it's not up to everyone else to police things for you. It is up to you to decide what is best for you and your family, what you can afford, what you're willing to commit to, and what your child wants and needs. It's not on anybody else.
.223 DGS coming up at 3 p.m. We have the priest and the rabbi. 4 p.m. we have Chad Cleveland's going to check in with us about what's going on with the SCOTUS and all of these decisions coming down. Let's play a little audio. This one, the Texas A&M coach is just, I've never seen someone misplay a situation quite this badly in a long time. So he just lost the national championship in the College World Series in Omaha. And a reporter's asking him about a rumor that he may be taking a job at the crosstown rivals in Texas. He's Texas A&M, and he scolds this guy for having the audacity to ask him that question, knowing full well that within 20 hours he's going to accept that job.
Coach, with respect to the difficult outcome tonight, but with the rumors circulating today about a specific job opening, what do you have to say about your future in Aggieland?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty selfish of you to ask me that question, to be honest with you. But I left my family to be the coach at Texas A&M. I took the job at Texas A&M to never take another job again. And that hasn't changed in my mind. That's
stop
unfair
right there.
To talk about something.
He knows he's going to take the other job.
Already knows, yes.
He already knows he's going to take the other job when he's dressing this guy down.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, we have to start over.
That's okay.
Coach, with respect to the difficult outcome tonight, but with the rumors circulating today about a specific job opening, what do you have to say about your future in Aggieland?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty selfish of you to ask me that question, to be honest with you. But I left my family to be the coach at Texas A&M. I took the job at Texas A&M to never take another job again. And that hasn't changed in my mind. And that's unfair to talk about something like that. That'd be like you asking Montgomery if he's going to sign in the draft. But I understand you got to ask the question. But I gave up a big part of my life to come take this job, and I've poured every ounce of my soul in this job, and I've given this job every single ounce I can possibly give it. So write that.
Then he gets up and he walks
Coach,
out.
Coach, thank you very much.
Yikes.
Yeah, and after he took the Texas job, he got they did the press conference, and he apologized. He's like, I know that it was an obvious question. I should have been prepared to answer better. Like, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you think?
No
yeah,
kidding. You should have known.
Lied.
You should have known before the game that you were going to be asked about it after the game and just had a standard prepared answer, not knowing whether you're going to win or lose. Either way, though, you want to have the same standard answer, which would have been simple. Listen, the game just ended. I'm crushed. We just lost the national championship. I don't have it in me to talk about anything else right now. And that's it. Yeah. Don't insult the guy for asking the obvious question. Don't go on a larger rant where you have to lie and make stuff up that's not true. And what people, I think, get lost in all of this stuff, too, is this is a guy leaving a program. Well, he's also taking his entire coaching staff. So they're all moving. The staff at Texas is all gone. They are all fired. They're all gone. So that's affecting right there. We're probably talking about 15 families that are impacted. But you also have all of the players at both of those schools. The ones at Texas A&M don't know if the new coach wants them or likes them or is going to trust them. They don't even know who the new coach is going to be. But yet they have to sit and wait and find out. The players at Texas don't know if the new guy wants them there or not. Should they stay? Should they leave? Should they transfer? What's their status? Then you have a whole other group of players that are signed to go to those schools that were recruited. So Schlossnagel recruited a bunch of kids to go there from all across the country. Now they don't know. Am I still going to Texas A&M? Is the new guy going to want me? Is my offer still going to hold? Or is Coach Schlossnagel going to try to bring me to Texas? Do I have to change my plans?
And it's such a dumb lie. Coaches leave all the time.
Yes.
Coaches leave after championships. Win, lose, draw.
Yeah.
It's not that big a deal to say, I'm the coach of Texas A&M, and if I decide to coach somewhere else, that's my personal decision to make with my family, and it's not something I want to discuss right now.
No, I think that's the simple. The simple, short answer in the post game gets you out of being this being a story, right? I mean, it's going to be a story in the college baseball world because you're leaving a huge school with a huge following to go to their arch rival. Like, that's going to be a story, but you didn't have to look like a jerk doing it.
You sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you today?
Good, my friend. I don't know if you were listening a couple segments ago, but Wheels had a really interesting piece of audio from a sports mom of a 6 and a 9-year-old complaining that it was ruining her marriage and the constant running around to practices and the select soccer and the baseball this and the travel basketball and that. I'm just curious overall kind of your views on kids playing sports and when it's enough and when it's too much.
Well, I mean, I think we're erring on the wrong side of that. I would say, generally speaking, there's a lot that's too much. I think some of it's out of necessity because, you know, the eras prior, all the play would be less kind of organized. And I think that was better. It's better for development. It's better for kids to be kids. It was just better for them to just kind of learn on their own and all of that. But we've got everything has to be organized and paid for and schedule driven. And that does create a stress on, I mean, we went through that when my kids were younger. They played select everything and a lot of trips and all that. And you got to, I mean, there's tension in that. And you try to say, oh boy, that's, you know, when is too much, but it's a negotiated thing for parents clearly, but you know, part of the negotiation ought to be what does the kid want to do? Does
yeah,
he want
man,
to play?
Yeah.
And I mean, our son told us when he was in first grade, he said, you know, he played T-ball the year before, and he said, you know, I don't really want to play baseball. I swallowed hard, and then he said, okay. So about 2 years later, his buddy said, hey, Drew, why don't you come play with our team? And he goes, and he asked if he could play on it. We were like, okay, we'll sign you right up. And then he loved playing. He played for fun, and you know, I mean, it was just a a wonderful experience, but you know, you got to kind of listen to what they want too.
Rick, are you like me? I believe that emotionally and physically, it's better for kids to play as many sports as they can to develop their body and their mind, as opposed to just focusing on one sport.
100%, 100% true. And if you want to say it even for a selfish reason, to say, "Oh, I really want my son to play baseball." Well, you want him to play baseball. They are going to be a better baseball player if they play football, they play basketball, they play soccer, because there's some agility things that they will learn, some body awareness things that they will learn from other sports better than you learn it just by playing baseball only. So I think, and maybe strength training, all this stuff. And again, now I'm not talking about 8-year-olds now, but teenagers. So, but the point is, you will get more of a well-rounded understanding. And here's another thing I think. You ought to play on a team where you're not very good at that sport, too.
Yes.
If you're going to be really good at one, it's kind of good to be on a sport where you're not good, so you can see how the other half lives a little bit and understand a little humility, because that's part of the lesson, too.
Rick, I'm always asking you, Dave, questions about baseball. Let me ask you one about broadcasting, something that we share. Yesterday, you and John did a doubleheader. I know it's double the work, but does it feel like even more than double the work?
Well, I mean, I would say about double, because we were there early, and I think the rain delay, every time there's a rain delay, it feels like double the work.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Because you're kind of amped up, ready to go, which, by the way, you know, all the players have to feel the same thing, and they do feel the same thing to a degree, because it's just more time and more anticipation and trying to stay ready and all of that. And so it was a long day, but, you know, honestly, the easiest part of it is the game itself. So I would say, to a degree, when you prep for the first game, you also prep for the second. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't, maybe in a way, I'd say it's a time and a half, you know, in terms of a doubleheader. But however, the hours wise, it's definitely two times the amount. And but the game part's the fun part, because it just is, it's reality programming. It's happening in front of you. So, you know, you do your prep, but then it's like, here it is. This is what I see. And that's the fun part.
Rick, take us behind the scenes. I was, you know, I know more than the average bear about how the Cardinals work just being on KMOX. But in between games, do they typically go shower? Do they change uniforms? Do they get a rub down? Like, what? I know they each do something different, but in general, what's it like in between games for a big leaguer?
I think they probably don't shower unless they, you know, if they had a, you know, kind of, I never did that. I don't think I ever saw players do that. However, here's the difference, though. Back in the day, Dave, when you were talking about a doubleheader, you're talking about a doubleheader that's starting 30 minutes after the first one.
Right.
Now you're talking about split doubleheaders, because they get the gates and they bring new people in. And so it could be, although the rain delay made it not that way, but it could be as much as a couple of hours later that you're playing. And in that case, that's a whole different animal. You'll probably eat something and maybe shower and kind of get refreshed. But, you know, I'm sure there's some video game playing and today and a lot of kind of you know, resting that goes on in between doubleheaders, because again, it's a pretty intense thing, you know, to be competing at that level, and you don't want to get kind of worn out by the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's got to be radically different, Rick, for every different guy, right? Like, I mean, for Kyle Gibson, his day's over. Right, he's not doing anything. He's a fan for the second game, but Matthew Liberatore's got to get ready to start the next game.
Well, it's always important for pitchers to understand that, you know, just because you don't have something to do doesn't mean somebody else doesn't.
I
mean,
so
why do you use it? Why do you at times would banish some of the starters into the bullpen? He'd say, just get out of here. Just go. Because they were fooling around too much. And it's like, look, these guys, you know, Ozzie and Willie and Tommy and Terry and Jack, they're playing. You're just thinking of another joke. So go out with the bullpen guys, because that's what they're doing. So, but there is something to that. By the way, Kyle Gibson did have a doubleheader, because the second game he caught the first pitch because it was Mizzou night.
Right.
So see, he had responsibility too.
Yeah.
It just
nice.
Wasn't that. I think he handled that pretty easily though.
Rick, what do you think that was with Gibson yesterday?
I think he was rusty from not pitching for a while, and he said he felt sharp and strong and all that, but he didn't look that way to me. And I'm not, you know, disputing him. I'm just saying I think he was probably not wanting to make that as an excuse, but, you know, he missed several days on bereavement, and then he missed the start because of a bad back. And I don't think he was like crazy off, but, you know, you're off just a little bit. Sometimes that's all that matters, especially when you're playing an A-list team like the Braves. I mean, they're good. And Cardinals winning 2 out of 3 against the Braves.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. That's a statement, I think, that the Cardinals made the last few days.
And Rick, talk a little bit about, I know that we discuss here on the show quite often, the mismatch right now, that we're in an era of pitching, and the league's looking for ways to increase the offense. But talk a little bit about, if you don't have your stuff, these guys, if you leave it fat over the plate, they're going to hit it almost every time.
Yeah, the old saying is still true, that good pitching beats good hitting any day. So you'd say, well, we got Ted Williams and Stan Musial. Yeah, it's like, well, we got Juan Marichal and Sandy Koufax. They're going to win. I mean, and you see that over in eras. Now I'm talking about eras before me when I say those names. But I think it's still true now. If a pitcher does his thing, I mean, he's gonna win. But the key for a hitter is to be ready for the mistake. And big league hitters are really good at not missing mistakes. I mean, they just are. That's the difference. One of the main differences between minor league guys and big league guys is that big leaguers just don't miss mistakes. And a mistake could be a hanging slider. It could be a fastball that misses its spot. And so that's a big part of the game. Just don't make mistakes.
Rick, I thought the biggest thing that happened yesterday was Matthew Liberatore, because going into it, I was worried that, wow, you already have two games in a day and you don't get a break. You got to go right into four games of the Reds. If the bullpen gets run down in two straight games, especially after Kyle only got four innings in the first game, man, that could be trouble. And Matthew Liberatore just erased all of that concern. That was amazing.
Yeah, I came up with the thing yesterday that, you know, pitchers in the bullpen, they're like kind of like Goldilocks. I mean, it's either too much or too little. It's never just right. So, I mean, you get an off day because of the rain and you go, oh, good, the bullpen gets a rest. And then the next day you play two games and now it's worse and it gets compounded the few days to follow. So it's just part of the reality of being a reliever, but the starting pitchers are still important. The further they go, the better. And interestingly, you know, for Liberatore, the Cardinals are really, I think, contemplating kind of a 6-man rotation type thing. And they need somebody to step up to say, Hey, here am I, you know, don't forget about me. And I think Liberatore did that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was, you know, we know that his history as a starter in the big leagues is not very long, but he's struggled more in that role than he has in the bullpen, where he's been excellent. But we did see what we saw yesterday. We saw from him, remember when he faced Tampa Bay last year, we saw that one game was like seven innings and he was amazing. He has this capability. So in your opinion, Rick, in watching him, what does it take for him not to repeat six shutout innings, but to be a consistent starter compared to the successful reliever we've seen?
Well, I think the expectation for him has to be, you know, and it's kind of the million-dollar question is, how do you become consistent at what you do? And that's really what the question is, because can he do it? Yes. Does he know he can do it? Yes. I don't think it's a confidence thing. I think there's sometimes he just, you know, maybe he overthinks, maybe his mechanics, you know, the idea of repeatable mechanics is something that Dave Duncan always talked about is, are you the same guy in 5 days that you were today? And there's a trick to that. And the more you know yourself, I just think it's experience, frankly. I think that's the best answer to that is the more you do it, the more you say, yep, this is who I am. And if you do it two or three times in a row, then you start to think like, okay, I used to say when I was teaching kids pitching lessons, they'd throw a good pitch and I'd say, okay, now do that the rest of your life. That was and John told John Rooney that, and he said, oh, that's great pitching advice. I said, well, you know, that's kind of what it is though. You just got to keep doing it. Stay on what works for you.
Rick, final question. Any thoughts about the Reds coming into town?
Reds are better than their record. They run like crazy. They're a fun team to watch. Their shortstop is kind of like Mason Wynn in terms of entertainment 24/7. So then they can pitch a little bit. It'll be a tough series.
All right, buddy. Have a great call.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we have the priest and the rabbi. Rach, you have some more audio?
I do. This is Donald Trump was recently asked about Taylor Swift, and he gives a response. Anything he would have said would have interested me just to hear one of the most famous people in the world talking about the other most famous person in the world. But here it is.
What do you think about Taylor Swift? The most famous, one of the most famous people right now.
Yeah, I think she's beautiful. Uh-huh. Very beautiful. I find her very beautiful. I think she's liberal. She probably doesn't like Trump, but I hear she's very talented. But I think she's very beautiful, actually. Unusually beautiful.
So that's the only positive thing you can say?
Well, she's a liberal, and she probably doesn't like Trump, so... I mean, at least he's saying something nice, because usually if he thinks someone doesn't like him, he just goes in for the kill.
He doesn't want that Swiftie smoke.
No, not at all. Not at all. He's like, but I do think she's pretty. Just Nobody so everybody does. Knows she's super pretty. There is a wonderful tweet. I think it was from Melania Trump's account originally, before Donald Trump ever became president. And she's sitting in the back seat of a car. Donald Trump is driving and Barron is sitting in the passenger seat, and they're listening to, I think, Blank Space by Taylor Swift. And it's just a wordless video of Trump driving and Blank Space is playing. And it's just one of those things that every time I see it, I have to watch it. It's just fun. It's just great. So for him to talk about her kind of brings the whole situation full circle for me. And all the people listening who spend too much time online have probably seen that Melania Trump video as well.
We were just watching. Joe Biden is already in Atlanta preparing for the debate, and he is meeting and greeting people. And there is one, and he's out there, and he's hugging people, and he's shaking hands and all this stuff. And there's one lady who is really yelling at him and really letting him have it. And I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden, but I was just like, leave him alone. Guy's got a big night tonight.
He's kind of got some stuff on his mind right now. I'm surprised they're having him go through the crowd like this. I mean, it could be easily avoided.
Yeah. I'm not being funny. He should be napping.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like if you are capable of being the most powerful person in the world, you can handle questions from people and a debate in the same day. And if you can't do those two things, I don't care who you are, whether you're Joe Biden or Donald Trump, if you can't do all of those things, then probably not your job.
Talking about all the mock debates that he's done in the past 2 weeks, and I was privately in my own head worrying about it, that, he's going to be tired. And I thought to myself, if you are worried that this man is going to be too tired for a real debate because of practice debates, he's too old.
Has CNN given a reason for the fact that there's no audience tonight? Because that's really strange to me. Why not? Why not have an audience that can react to Donald Trump and to Joe Biden?
I wonder if they want to avoid all this, the one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like, do they want to avoid all the just, I'm going to do this to get a reaction?
It really feels like, it feels like to me, CNN kind of trying to handicap Trump a little bit.
Maybe.
Because if he can't have his people in the audience backing him up and making noise whenever he speaks. But
Hannity did a whole thing last night about how CNN has set it up in every way possible for Biden to succeed. Apropos what you're talking about, having no audience, having the mics muted when it's not your turn. And I can't stand Sean Hannity. I wouldn't walk across the street and pee on him if he was on fire. But I can't disagree with him on this one.
No, he's not wrong. It definitely smacks of like we're doing everything possible to help Biden, which would be one thing if it was. I do think that's wrong. I think you let the chips fall. These are two people running for the same office. It's the whole like no audience thing is extremely strange to me and only feels like a way to hurt Trump. Not that, not that I'm like, don't hurt Trump, but it's just very obvious what it is.
CNN is not my favorite station, as in I'm not a big fan. I don't think they do a very good job. But they're my typical go-to because if you have three crap sandwiches in front of you, one's going to be your favorite, right? But the other stations, the other news outlets are really mad at them because this is the first time that we've had a debate that wasn't from the Commission on Debates. And so it's typically it is, whatever it's called, the American National Foundation on Debates or what have you. But this one is simply private with CNN.
Yeah.
So it is the CNN presidential debate, and you can only refer to it as such.
So the whole like, I'm sorry, we did everything we could, but Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just can't be in the debate. Like, that's just 100% CNN's decision. Yeah. It's not some part
Fox
of a larger guideline.
And News Nation and Newsmax and all of those have to say CNN every time they mention it.
Wow. Yeah.
And why are we doing it? Like, why don't we just have this a structure in place? Every presidential race, every 4 years, they're going to be three debates. They're going to be run by the same group under the same
typically
circumstances. Nobody, no audiences, no nothing, just straightforward. We are letting it happen instead of trying to manage everything.